Hi guys, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery, and I'm located in Van.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
All right, I'm ready to go.
All right, let's get it. All right.
We've already started, so...
Okay, well, we're live. Hello.
We are. Hello.
Hello.
And we are with
Julianne Roush.
And Julianne, will you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh my gosh. Well, we're sitting in, Becca's visiting me. She's been traveling around the country and she showed up at my house for this week. So we've had a fun week so far.
Yeah.
And I've been doing ceramics since 1989.
A year before I was born, 2 years before Ryan.
Yeah. So I'm not old.
No. Yeah.
But I've just been around the block. I'm mostly a hand builder at the moment, but I do throw. And I make really vibrant, colorful pottery. And I've been using a lot of inspirational quotes in my work.
Yeah. And I feel like, to give like a visual representation of your pots, they are, I would say, like, they're super bright colors with like a black outline. And like, I don't know. It's hard to describe it, actually.
Yeah, I do some different
It's almost like patchwork, almost.
A little bit fabric-like.
Yeah.
Most of my work is stamped. I make all of my own stamps. Most of them are made out of wire, which is a little bit different than a lot of other people have been doing. So it's very fabric-like.
And there's a lot of, like, and, like, the wire, she puts Canthal wire on and does little like jewels that kind of like hang off the handles.
They're like earrings.
Yeah, they're like little earrings for the mugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, tell them that you've owned like
things. Oh, so I started out, you know, after going to college. I have a degree in international marketing, but I went to school for ceramics in San Francisco, and my brother said, "Why don't you move home and start a business?" So I opened a paint-it-yourself pottery studio, which I had for 13 years. And that was 13 years too long, because it's 13 years of birthday parties every day, all day long. So loved it. But it was a lot. My studio that I opened in 1997 is still going strong, even though I sold it in 2008.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's one of the one of the older ones in Michigan, I would think. It's still
probably
in.
That's independently owned and not like a paint, like Color Me Mom.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
it's still going. I then moved to I opened a clay studio with an art gallery attached to it, and I had that for a few years. And then the economy kind of took a hit, and I decided to move back out to Oregon, and I sold it. And so, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, now she's back in Michigan.
I'm back in Michigan. I have just a tiny little studio space, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and she lives right on the river.
I live on the water.
On the water.
On the river.
And we learned about sturgeons tonight. Have you ever heard of a sturgeon before?
A sturgeon, a fish, the sturgeon.
Oh, I'm not.
It's a prehistoric thing. It's a prehistoric fish that's still in existence.
And they're massive. Like, they can get up to 12 feet long.
And 125,
150, 175
pounds.
But they're, like, nice.
Fish. It's not like a crocodile or something like that.
No, it's
but it's big like a crocodile. But it's a docile fish that's prehistoric that's still in existence. It's actually endangered, I do believe.
I was going to say, do people fish for it? Like, do they catch them? And I would guess you can't keep them, but...
They do have a very short fishing, like,
window?
Open season.
Okay.
You have to have a a tag for it, license, so it's only like X amount of people get them.
Yeah. But they're bottom dwellers, so they like float along the river, and they, as Tom, your dad described, they have like an accordion like thing that like goes down into the floor.
Like a catfish, I think.
Kind of like a catfish, mm-hmm. and like eats all the stuff on the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I'm Googling this now. Sturgeon.
And
I live on the Sturgeon River. Yeah. But it's the sturgeon fish you're looking
and for. And in your town, there is a giant sculpture of a sturgeon.
It's giant. It's probably 20-something feet.
And let me tell you, it's not a good-looking fish. And to
no,
have
it's
a
not attractive.
No, to have a sculpture of it in a town is a little odd.
It looks like a fish that wants to be a shark.
Yes.
Yes, but it sucks the bottom. It's the bottom sucking.
And it's nice.
It's like a scavenger.
A little bit, but they're ancient. They're prehistoric. They're like dinosaurs. The dinosaur fish that's still around.
Yeah.
I mean, they look massive in these photos here. I mean, when people catch them, they get the tags for them. Do they eat them? Are they like good to eat, or is it just more for show? Because it's a good I'm sure it's quite the catch to get one.
I don't know. I personally would do catch and release. You know, and I would hope that some.
You're also a vegetarian.
Well, I would suspect the tag means they could keep it, right?
I think they can. I know that sturgeon caviar, sturgeon eggs are like in Russia are known. That's the caviar. That's best, the fancy caviars.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, this is what Google says when I said, okay, can you eat sturgeon? It says, it is safe to eat sturgeon for both their meat and their
roe. Which is the eggs.
Oh, which is the eggs.
Yeah.
Whether it's ethical is in the eye of the beholder. Sturgeons are prehistoric fish that have been a sought-after meal since the dawn of human civilization. Their meat and roe are harvested in most northern countries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's a weird thing. I live in tiny town of Indian River on the Sturgeon River.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. So anyway, that's our fun. I feel like we've been doing a lot more fun facts of the day that are just like weird.
Not pottery related.
Not pottery related. Oh,
definitely.
And that's it. That's ours.
They all learned about this. Their historic Sturgeon River.
Yeah. So you said you're kind of like back home, quote unquote. Is this pretty much where you grew up? And then when you did go to San Francisco, come back, like this is where you came back to? Is this area?
No. I grew up closer to Detroit. And my parents retired up here. And, after divorce, I moved back in with my folks.
Yeah, but also I think it's mutually. Her parents are in their 80s. So
it's been helpful for them. And it was in a weird way, it worked out really well.
Yeah.
It wasn't anticipated or wanted it immediately, but
yeah.
But I have a studio space here.
Yeah.
And it's
great. It looks good. I mean, is it climate controlled?
It is.
It's in the basement, but it's actually in a bedroom that used to be a bedroom, but we have tile floors.
Oh, that's perfect.
And there's a bathroom across the hall. I'm very, very careful about how I deal with anything going down the sinks, though. I more or less do a bucket system, and just pour clear water off. And my kilns are across the hall in my dad's wood shop, away from the sawdust.
Yeah.
Okay. I did a little, I think it was on Threads a few weeks back, and I was like, would you rather be in a hot studio in the middle of the summer or a cold studio in the middle of winter? Like, what would you prefer to be in? I feel like you've been in a variety of studios.
Sure, all summer down here because it's cold. But I'd rather have a sweatshirt on than just sweating. You know, I'd much rather have a sweat.
What if it's a studio that's like detached? Like it's based on the elements. Like it's not going to be climate controlled. It's just going to be in, like, an exterior garage.
I have something to say about that.
Yeah.
Is this our would you rather?
I mean, it's not, but I thought of it. I thought of it now that I'm like looking at the studio, and she's talked about a bunch of different studios she's been in, and been in Oregon and Michigan, and
yeah.
So I've had a studio that was cold as motherfucking cold. It was so fucking cold.
I couldn't deal with that.
It was very
not
fun.
I mean,
but having a hot studio for me hasn't ever been an issue. Like,
I guess you can just walk around in tank top and shorts,
right? And and you can just throw water on you.
Yeah, but if you're in the winter, you can't be doing pottery wearing a snowmobile suit.
Yeah.
Because I do have my 1970 snowmobile suit I found in the closet.
Yeah. I wonder what, like, because I wonder what, like, Beth Harden, she's up in, like, northern Canada. Like,
yeah.
Because even the warmest of warm days is probably, like, really comfortable for us, like, you know, a spring day for a warm, I don't know, maybe not, but.
Yeah.
But those frigid winters, like, that's, you know, about 0 degrees, like, what, you know.
I have to have temperature controlled environment at all times.
I feel like it definitely controls, like, your productivity, at least for me. I can see how people are just like, oh, I gotta go out to the studio. It's so fucking hot. Or it's so free. I mean, I would rather be in a cold studio than a hot studio, personally, but.
Yeah, but where you have to break the ice on the water so you can throw?
Oh. No, you just fill up with warm water.
I mean, have you ever had a 5-gallon bucket of glaze freeze? Because I have, and it fucking sucks. Oh, I used to have to glaze all of my shit in my front porch, and then that was back in the days when I didn't have an electronic controller. I had a cone sitter.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would have to go out on my porch when it was 20 degrees and wait for this goddamn kiln to shut off so I could turn it back on for 6 minutes. And it was awful.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's...
So you'd rather be in the hottest of hot summer?
I would rather it be 100 degrees.
Okay.
This needs to be a little higher.
Maybe. Yeah, sure.
We're going to lift Ryan up here, so we don't have to... We're looking down. Oh, there.
Just so you know, because we got a little... the recording stopped. Julianne just put the computer on top of a teal Shimpo banding wheel, and that is what we are continuing to talk about. Okay, bye!
This year's in Sika.
And I was like... I mean, I went to college in Japan. I needed the Japanese teal.
Why are they giving us that god-awful blue if they have teal?
Blue's better than a lot of other colors, I'm sure.
Is it, though? This is a beautiful teal
color.
What if it was Brent yellow?
I would take that over blue.
Oh, the mustard, that mustard Brent yellow? My kid,
my wheat. Brown.
Yeah.
Oh, we're the we have you on the which one's to move
on the
banging wheel. Yeah, I got it.
We're taping you down. All right,
Becca, stop recording there for a minute, but I started again, so I don't know what happened. But
okay, sounds good.
All right,
anyway, okay, so that's you and that's your life.
My life currently, yes, I quit a regular job at the end of the Christmas season 2019, and I've been full-time since.
Wow. That was like right in the thick of a bunch of shit changing into 2019.
It was perfect timing for all that changing, because I was managing a store, and I was like, I don't be in that store with all those
people. Oh, okay. So do you think you would have either been heavily stressed in 2020, or you would have been... let go, or would other things have changed if you were still in that during that period of time?
I wouldn't have been let go, but I think I would have had more responsibilities on top. I was the manager, the main buyer, you know, I did most of the things at the store. So I think I would have probably had more things put on me during that time, because as soon as spring hit downstate, everyone decided, well, there's not COVID up north, we're gonna go up north. So it was like slammed that first summer of COVID up here.
Oh, wow. Okay. Huh.
Yeah, it was.
Well, yeah, because of all the COVID deniers, they kind of like.
Yeah. So that first.
I mean, it makes sense.
That first summer, everyone was up in the northern Michigan was slammed with work.
If I didn't believe in COVID, this is where I'd go.
Yeah.
For sure. Lots of fresh air.
I thought it was supposed to be sunlight stuff. I thought that was early on.
I don't know.
Heavy sun, stuff like that. Outdoors?
Outdoors. Yeah. The whole outdoors. And a lot of people, you know, downstate have cabins way up here. You know,
there's probably a lot less density there. So it was probably a lot more enjoyable being on a lake and nature and all that stuff. Right?
For sure. Like my town's like 1,500 people.
Yeah.
Year round. And then it's like 20,000 people during the summer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to know what the original what would you do if question was.
Oh, okay. So the what would you do if, and this will be interesting because Julian's a hand builder. So it said, what would you do if you had all the free clay?
If I had all the free clay?
Yeah. So if you, I guess you never had to pay for clay again.
Oh. I don't know. That clay's like the least expensive
part.
So, I mean, I do throw, and I was throwing quite large for a while. I don't know what to start doing. I've been wanting to do more like stacked, I don't want to say garden stacked piece, but like sculpturally stacked totem being the incorrect word, but you know, that kind of a stacked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sectional, like stacked piece.
Sectional stacked sculptural pieces that look like my other pieces, but large. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. I would build a pizza oven.
Entirely out of clay?
Hell yeah. People do it all the time with all their like reclaim and stuff. They put like a sand dome and then they put the clay on and they just let the oven bake itself essentially.
How did they form it? You said a sand dome,
like a mound.
Do they do it over like with over like a mesh metal?
No, they just do it on sand.
Oh.
And then they take the sand out.
Oh, okay.
They put it in the sun, let it dry and bake a little bit. They take the sand out and then they fire on the inside so it bakes it to like a bisque. Mm-hmm. And then they just keep firing it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. They're pretty.
I've never.
But I mean, that's the only thing. I don't really need that much clay. I'm still working on a bag that I got in January. So
when you do jewelry.
Yeah.
A bag will last
you. Would you have had a different answer if you weren't in van?
I guess I'd just throw a bunch of cups.
Yeah. My only change would be I wouldn't probably put as much stress into recycling it. I would probably give away the recycling and not try to reclaim.
I kind of, you know, I don't do a ton of recycling, but I kind of like the consistency of my recycle.
Mm-hmm.
I use it mostly for handles because I get it to a nice consistency so it doesn't crack as much as when I just take it right out of the bag because I do hand form I more do hand form handles compared to like a pulled handle.
Yeah.
So they dry out quicker.
So the reclaim is generally stiffer or
wet, more wet.
Okay.
It's more wet and it works really well for my handle. So I do like my reclaim for handles.
Yeah.
Although because I do a lot of stamped work, I use cornstarch to keep the stamps from sticking, and it makes the reclaim disgusting. It is.
Oh, like when you put it in water and all that, it just gets gross? Or like what does it do?
It smells bad.
I should show you this bucket over here. It's a black bucket of nasty sludge. It's disgusting, but it's really weird. I'll dry it out on the wedging table because I have a poured plaster wedging table, and then you know you're wedging it, And the outside will start turning the regular natural color of the clay because the air is hitting it.
Mm-hmm.
And you slice through it and it's black in the center still. And it looks like looks like marbled clay, like if you had marbled it with like green or with cobalt or something.
Right.
My clay used to be a dark gray.
Yeah.
Because of all the black. Yeah.
But it fires again back onto my. It's a slightly off white clay body. It's okay. So much that I use. So
it's just kind of gross to work with, but it's good enough.
It is gross to work with, but it makes great handles.
Okay.
I don't know what about it.
And that's all that matters, really.
Yeah. I don't know what about that nasty reclaim, but my handles are work.
Yeah. I mean, I would suspect with hand building, you probably don't have much reclaim at all.
No, because I immediately, you know, throw it back into a container and you just add a little water and, you know, it's not like you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you cut edges off.
So what's kind of the variety of forms that you make?
Of course, mugs have been the biggest thing I've been making just because they've been a good seller. But I'm kind of getting tired of making mugs. So
who isn't really?
I know they sell. I kind of want to be like Becca and start making some earrings. So I've actually made some wire forms that I'm going to be using for some stamping. I love this new flower pot that I just did. Let me show you my flower pot. I'm so excited. All right.
Oh, that's cool.
And it has a dangly.
Is that that's the bottom?
Yeah. So this is the. It's a flat hanging flower pot.
Oh, it hangs. Okay.
If you tipped it over for anybody not watching, because nobody's watching.
No one's watching. But Ryan can see it.
If you tipped it over, it kind of looks like a circus tent.
Yes. Because I've got my, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like spacey, like Sputnik looking sort of.
A little Sputnik-y. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them spin, some don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great though.
So I've been playing and I've been really working on making bigger things because I want to start doing these stacked pieces, some more garden style things. Although in Northern Michigan, I think it should really be in your living room as a piece of artwork, not
stacked in the garden. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really want to be garden art. I want to be like sculptural pieces.
Yeah.
I think the scale's a lot to do with that because there's probably a big middle ground between like, you know, a 1 foot piece and a yard piece. Like,
yeah.
You know, a 2 foot piece of yard. Feet. Oh, bigger than you.
Like 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that'd be huge.
Yeah.
But stacked. So.
Right. Yeah. I'm thinking like there's a production potter in Minnesota, Ryan Ball Pottery. He makes bird baths every now and then, and just like the size that you'd have to make
bird baths,
and the size you'd have to make to like make it look significant in the yard because it's so massive and like, you know, it's got to be 3 feet tall or 4 feet tall. Like, you know, these things are huge.
Yeah, like Ryan's made his dad some bird bowls that hang off of a tree, and they were pretty big, but they're not even.
They're not big. I mean, they're about the size of a bat, maybe. So maybe 14 inches wide.
Okay.
Yeah, like 14 inches wide. I think it's hilarious because it's broken like 4 times and he's glued it together like 6 times.
Oh my God, my dad keeps gluing. I have one too I made for my dad for.
They just glue them.
It's
horrible. But that's like not even the size you need. You need like almost like a 25 inch.
But these are also my other big.
Oh yeah, we should talk about the butter dishes.
Yeah, so mugs and butter dishes are the main ones your main inventory, and besides the newer things you're making.
Well, yeah. So you know, was it 2 years ago at ClayCon West, I demoed.
Yeah.
A butter dish that I had made. And then I was approached by De La Design to, they do 3D printing. So they made a basically a cookie cutter style template. And so those have been, it's been huge.
Are they like made just for you or are they branded with your branding and then they sell them with your name on them or?
they are like on their website, my face comes up and these are like designed by Julianne Rausch and I get a small, you know, commission. Smidgy commission off each one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And they're well, it's so rough, you can't see, but they're like cookie cutters.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So there's like the plate, you know, and then the top. There's multiple pieces. I've got.
I think there's three pieces, right? There's the plate, the top, and the side.
Oh, and the push piece because I use the plate has a piece that you could push into upholstery foam.
Oh, okay. Get the design, invention, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a good way of making passive income if you make a mold.
It is. It's been a great way to make, you know, passive income because I get a very small percentage, you know, off of these, but it's been actually quite lucrative. So.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the butter dishes are perfect for hand building because, like, I don't even want to think about wheel throwing butter dishes, like. Make the bottomless thing, you oval it, you put a slab. I mean, you're still hand building because you're putting a slab on, you're joining it, you're making a slab bottom. Like,
yeah, you've really, I mean, you can make the round ones, which I've done too before, but people are like, but then I have to cut my butter in half. I'm like, oh, that's really hard to cut a stick in half.
I personally, no offense, think that round butter dishes are a sin against all things. It is the worst idea to have a butter dish that is round. Unless...
Is that meant to be like the ones that are just like a bell shape that you just sit on the counter and you have like a... It's like a lid.
Hand-built.
Yeah.
And I used to throw them too, but yeah.
The only time that I can find like a reason that a round butter dish is acceptable is if you're pushing the butter in like a butter bell.
Like this one. This is the butter bell.
Which...
Oh, that's like a... Keeper, right? French butter keeper, is that what it is?
Yeah. Or if you're buying Amish butter. That's my only exception. If you buy Amish butter, you can have a round butter dish.
Because you buy it like by this weird, like...
It's in a tube.
Tube shape.
So it's round.
So then you could put it in the butter bell.
Or in a round butter dish.
Yeah, because you just slice it.
I like hand building a butter bell because then you should do a butter bell... mold.
I should. Because it's...
Yeah. Yeah, because butter bells, like, the fact that you're hand building them makes them the same size every time.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have your own mold for it.
I have my own measurements for it,
yeah. Yeah, your own measurements, and, like, they're awful. I mean, making butter bells are awful.
Yeah.
So it's...
When you say bell, you mean the one that's just a plate with like a dome shape, two piece?
The like, butter bell is the...
It's the where you take the... Okay, so you have your... it's a whole piece. You take your softened butter, you stick it in the top, and you add water to the bottom. And then you...
So that's the same... I thought that was called a butter keeper. Is that not... Is that the same thing?
You know, butter bell, I think, is a French...
It's term. French butter bell or a butter keeper. Yeah.
They really started out before refrigeration.
Yeah.
Potters have been making them for
Because the water years. Seals the butter because there's no air that actually gets to the butter. And so the butter can stay fresh longer. Now, nowadays, it doesn't matter because...
We all have refrigeration.
And our butter is pasteurized. So it's like, it doesn't ever go bad anyway. And like, if you're eating butter on a regular basis, you're eating it. Because it's butter.
But it's nice and soft because you can still do this and not break your toast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could picture like a little bitty dangly bell on top or something with your wire.
Would that be fun too? Like a wire with a little bell?
Like a handle with a little bell.
Oh my gosh. Except for you have to set this on the table.
You don't have to.
No. You have to like have the bell. I'll have to figure that out. I'll work on it.
I don't know. I might.
The side.
Yeah, it actually ring.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little clay bell that rings. Ding, ding, butter time.
You can put, I've got an idea. You can make the bell and you put a little loop of your wire and then you can make a little bell thingy so that you can loop the wire around and it'll ding in
like
there.
A clapper totally so it's like ding ding butter clapper at all. I was up there on that one immediately
immediate
people, people have the little butter scoop thing with it? Like, could the scoop, could the little spreader thing sit inside the wire and, like, hold
just
it?
Just use a knife from your drawer.
But you could have a little wire sticking out and a little handmade clay knife that looks so cute that goes
my
with it.
My God, this butter
on one side.
A $5,000 butter dish.
Oh, I am up for a $5,000 butter dish. I just need to find someone who's going to pay for a $5,000 butter dish.
This is ridiculous.
It's awesome. One side, I love it.
It's got the clay spreader on the other side.
Yeah.
All in one.
Totally doing it. Totally doing it, Ryan.
I need to make a clay knife for my friend for her butter dish for Christmas.
Oh, my gosh.
Her husband got her a butter dish so that it would fit inside the butter keeper. Like, it would fit inside the actual dish that they have. But it's got too big of a handle. Anyway, moving on. Holy cow, we've been talking for 45 minutes already?
Oh, my God.
I don't know when you started recording, but yeah, it's probably been close to that.
It just flies by, man. It just flies by. Should we do a question?
Yeah, we had a question that was probably good for this scenario. All right, so it reads, I'm working on finding the right market for my work, and it's been pretty difficult. I primarily enjoy carving porcelain in a similar style to Elaine Coleman. I feel like my work is decent quality, but I'm struggling to find buyers. Do you have any advice for me? My IG handle is Thorpe Ceramics, so Thorpe Ceramics, if you're willing to give me feedback. So I thought this was applicable because, yeah, Julianne, you make some unique stuff that probably isn't something that might be good at, like, an art market or a farmer's market. And
when you take 5 hours to make a mug, you can't sell that at a farmer's market.
Yeah.
Because the price is not farmer market, you know, they're just going to go, what the hell? You know? So, you know, I guess with the back to the question, though, about how to find your market. Really? Is that what, Ryan, what the question?
Yeah, finding your market when you, and I'm going to look up her stuff while.
Yeah.
She's struggling to find buyers.
You know, and I just really started putting myself out on Instagram and Facebook, you know, and that's how I found my buyers. I found my market by putting myself out there every day. And yes, it's a pain in the butt to but my goal was to do 5 posts a week.
Well, and also when you started, like, actually selling your stuff pretty heavily, I feel like you got pretty vocal on Clay Buddies too.
I did.
And that helped.
Yeah.
That helped a lot. And I think that, like, that whole idea kind of a building a community.
It is. It's building a community. You're building it's a community of other potters. Those other potters often are your
clientele.
Your clientele. Not always, but often are. And
And you're bigger on Facebook than you are on Instagram.
I try to do equal, but I still am bigger on Facebook, yes.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you which one you're having more results with. Are you, for Facebook, are you getting more engagement because it's fellow ceramicists from Clay Buddies that are going to your page and stuff, or?
It may be. And then I started, you know, doing the whole Reels program. I was invited on Facebook, not on Instagram, although Instagram has invited me to do a few things. So I was doing the Reels program. So because you're getting paid from Reels, I was really pushing that heavily because, I was making, you know, good money doing it, as well as you're promoting your work. And it was kind of a combo. But yeah, Facebook has been more of my go-to clientele, where I've got more people interested, you know, sign up for my website and, you know, get on my email list and that kind of thing.
It's so hard because, like, whenever we get these questions, my, like, go-to answer feels like you just got to put yourself out there. You just got to, like, be dumb or something, you know, like, just
You've got to put yourself out
there. And you have to be yourself, and you have to show your face, and you have to, show people that you're a person. But I know how hard that is for some people. It's, so hard for some people. And it's, well, what do you tell those type people, mm-hmm. you know? Because, some people are so introverted or so shy that, putting themselves out there is, really, really hard. But is there any other way to do it?
I get much more interest, much more following of whatever I do if I put my face on the video or mm-hmm. the face on the post than if I'm just showing me doing a little bit of glazing or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but you figure, you're in front of a million people on the internet.
Yeah.
But.
And it's funny because sometimes I'll see videos and I'll be why are you acting that way? Why are you acting like you have a billion followers, but you have 10 followers? And then I'm oh, Becca, that's because you're supposed to be like that.
And I've gotten more interest on the days that I'm unshowered. I look like hell. Thank God people can't smell me through the internet, you know? And those are the ones my videos that have gotten more
follows.
That is when I look complete hell. I'm like, I don't care. I'm in my basement. I'm making something. I guess is what you're going to get today. And those have been the better ones.
Some more context for her. So she's in Utah.
Okay.
Point two is she's actually going to be presenting at ClayCon West on carving porcelain. Emily Thorpe.
I've got it.
She's if you look at her profile, you can look at her stuff. She's actually got a couple different bodies of work. So she's got more
carved,
smooth sided pieces with glazes. So the glazes are doing the shining. And then she's got some carved porcelain that are to me, the carved porcelain feels like, I wonder if applying for gallery shows or exhibitions or something like that could be an option to reach more of those buyers. Or just get more interest in that type of work because for me that seems a little more in that that seems more like the lane to find buyers for that.
For sure. And I've done a little bit of that. I don't, obviously when you're going through that kind of market, you're still only getting 50%. You know, it's just like any gallery. But to get your name out there, it's good to do those kind of shows, even if it's just a mug show or a vessel show of some sort or a dinnerware show. You know, I've done those kind of things. So.
Well, also, I feel like it, I mean, this has nothing to do with ceramics, but she is cute as a button, too. Wow, wow, wow. So cute. but her stuff is really cute. Good.
Yeah, it's very nice. Where is she?
Do you think the form itself that is chosen to be carved makes a difference? Are there certain forms that are more conducive to that or more sellable that like putting carving on a mug? Okay, the mug form is inherently going to be more likely to meet buyers because people just love mugs. Is that a good option versus doing forms that are more presentation only and less function?
A carved plate is more like something you would hang on your wall.
So, yeah.
I definitely think that, I personally wouldn't buy a carved plate, but I do want to interject this, and I know she probably already knows this, but if you're making a carved plate, you need to be putting holes in the back so that you can hang it, P.S.
A nice hanger system in the back.
Yeah, a nice hanger system. But I've always felt mugs and functional wear is what sells the most in the carving. I mean, I don't carve stuff, but from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And jars and stuff and vases. Oh, big vases.
Urns.
And urns, yeah.
Urns are big money.
Yeah. There's a lot of money in the dead.
There's a lot of money in the dead.
It looks like she does have some mugs that have carving on them. I think the convex surface is good for the carving so that it showcases it and makes it pop versus a concave, the plate.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
But agreed, because you're looking at this kind of a surface for
yeah.
Is it Figella? Have you heard of? I don't know. She has in these incredible carved urns. Incredible carved urns.
Let's look her up.
Yep.
Lucy.
Is it F?
I found it.
Oh, yeah. Figella.
Figella. Wow, wow, wow. Okay.
Okay, and then she has her urns on it. She does pottery, and then she's got a separate urn website. Like, uh-huh. Lucy's urn. Like,
Lucy's urns.
Lucy's urns. And they're incredibly... Look at this one. Like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So carved...
Oh, they're cute. Yeah, well,
She's just biodegradable urns, too.
Oh, my gosh. You don't even have to fire it. No, you can just throw it in the ground.
It's just biodegradable? Like paper clay kind of biodegradable urns that she makes, too.
Because it's not fired at all. It's just green where bone dry.
I guess.
Yeah, kind of.
Maybe, like, fired a little so it looks... Those are cute.
They're cool, but that's, you know, but those are carved. So it's finding your niche.
Yeah, it looks like she's doing some shows. I'm trying to see on a website. But yeah, it is a lot of trial and error, and I would say, you know, if you're willing to risk the applying to stuff, I would say the shows and exhibitions could be an option for that type of work.
Yeah.
It'll take some time, I'm sure, because you're only doing pieces here and there, you know. But have you done any shows, Julianne? Have you done exhibitions?
I mean, like, I've done a few shows. Like I did a dinnerware show at the Jewish Community Center in Detroit. I was invited to this big dinnerware show. So basically, it was a giant table set. And so everybody did a different setting, which was kind of cool. And then I did another show about colorful pottery in Portland at the, oh my gosh,
Eutectic
Gallery. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I've done a few. I'd like to do a few more. It's just a nice way to get more eyes on your work. You know, even, you know.
Yeah, because maybe, I wonder if, like, maybe doing carved work is more of a gallery situation as opposed to a farmer's market situation, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, if you're doing, like...
Hours of work.
Yeah, hours of work, then it should be, like... You're going to have to give up some money at some point, but, like, yeah, put it in a show. See if you can get it into certain galleries around the country. I mean, that's kind of a great way to just put yourself out there.
More eyes on your work, more people know about it, because maybe you're Charlie Cummings or, you know.
And don't worry about getting rejected. Everybody gets rejected.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But, yeah.
But it's nice when you just get, like, a little email saying, hey, we'd love for you to be in our show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if you apply and they're like, oh, we don't think you fit this show, they can, like, remember you and be like, hey, this show actually works more for your style. Would you like to apply again?
Absolutely.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not that we know anything about that.
I haven't really done a lot. Just a little bit.
Galleries or anything. But I do think that there is something to be said for the more, like, fine artsiness.
Yeah. Like, it's not a wholesale. It's not something you want to do wholesale. It's too much work. That's why I no longer do wholesale, because, you know, you can't make it.
Yeah.
I mean, the gallery's doing all of the advertising for you that you would normally have to do. They're doing most of the legwork. You know, if you are a shy human or if you're a busy human, and, like, getting into a gallery show might just be the way to do it, because they're showing all your work to all the people you don't have access to.
And then you have more followers after the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's also intimidating a little bit to price, like, if not farmer's market, I won't say farmer's market, but, like, if you're doing art shows and you're a little, most of your work is not in the price point of your carved stuff. If you're kind of feeling like you have to price it more attractively for the customers because it's already a big jump. Like, if you're at a gallery, you probably feel more comfortable pricing it what you actually think it's valued at, versus, not that you should overprice just because they're taking a cut, but like, price it at what you think it's actually valued at. And those customers that are your ideal customers are going to spend that you would be like ecstatic if they bought it, versus like, I feel like I tend to like come down a little bit if I'm, I don't know, stuff sits around and I keep bringing it to shows and it doesn't sell. I'm like, I just want to get rid of this. Let's price it down a little bit, maybe. Or
yeah.
Do you know what my friend used to say? Instead of pricing it down, price it up.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. And actually, I've heard people say
it works.
If it was really? 30 and you put it for 50, all of a sudden it's going to sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
So put that thing that you hate, Ryan. Put it up.
I tend to not take them to shows sometimes and just like, okay, I would much rather, I'd much rather put these other things on the table that I know have a better likelihood of selling than.
Yeah. I mean, I do the same thing. Everybody does that.
Yeah. And people have been asking me to do some shows and I've just been reluctant.
Your stuff would do really well at a fine artsy show.
But it would be
a fine artsy show and you'd have to have more.
Inventory. And to make the amount of inventory to fill a tent is, I don't know if I could do it. That'd be like my year's worth of work.
Yeah, you'd have to do like a show or two a year and that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And right now I can only do like a update on my website, a handful of times a year. And then I sell stuff when I do workshops. So I've been doing a lot more workshops lately. So that's been so I sort of save stuff. If I have, 25 students, I try to take at least 20 pieces,
Yeah.
Just so that they.
Yeah. For me, I also feel like it's more enjoyable for me to make many things at a certain price point that will equal the price of one bigger thing. Do you feel that at all? Like, your pieces are already more expensive than mine, so maybe that's not the best comparison, but like, a big sculpture, the work and the hours involved in a big sculpture versus making five smaller things that would equal the cost of a big sculpture.
Oh, yeah. I would rather have one big sculpture and then a bunch of smaller items for sure. Because that's like the draw into the booth. You have like a crazy sculpture, or something that
is
people
see. Is that the same feeling if you weren't selling at a show and you were just, you're making out of your home and you have to advertise and sell it and ship it and like
that would be a hard one. I want to do bigger work, but I'm thinking I'm gonna have to probably those might have to be gallery pieces somewhere.
Yeah. Would that change if you didn't have to ship it at all and you just wanted just the making part of that equation? Do you feel better making one bigger thing or like five of the smaller things that will equal the cost?
I'd probably do more of the smaller things, but I have this desire to make a few big things.
Yeah.
I think more for my own personal.
I just got this weird urge to like make a really large vase for some reason, like a really large fancy vase, like just now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like Robert, what's his name? What's Roberto Lugo?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, those are massive.
They're massive.
Or Danny Meisinger.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like maybe it's just because I don't want to like feel like I wasted any time. Like the risk involved in making something that I've never made before and it just failing is not on my list of wanting to do, because I'm like, why put that much risk in something that
you could have made 100 mugs or more.
Yeah.
In that time.
And I'm pretty confident they're going to come out. Or if a few of them break, it's not a big deal. But if one big thing breaks, then all that time feels lost to me. But obviously it is a learning process. And if you plan on making more of them, you've got to make some shit ones first. And, but.
I don't know. I think you sometimes just need to take the time out to play. And I feel that. Don't you feel like you just need to play sometimes?
I tell Ryan that all the time.
I need to play. I can't just make this mug over and over. I need to play and be.
Yeah, I can't let the business brain be the driver in that. It has to be creative and maybe that's why I do the soda firing and stuff. Like I'm just doing that for fun. That's the play.
But you are playing some.
Yeah, with the soda firing. Yeah.
Because you got to go out and play sometimes. You can't just be all business.
Yeah.
I know we got to make money. We have to make it. You got to pay the bills. You got to make ends meet. You know, that thing. But I still feel like the need to play sometimes.
Do you have to schedule play or do you kind of do it enough that?
If I come down to the studio and I'm like, if I need that day to be a play day, I just make fun things.
Yeah.
Because if not, I actually won't get any work done.
Because you're thinking of other things, or you just feel like a robot going through the motions, or
I won't make the mugs I would have made that day.
Yeah.
Because my brain is somewhere else. So I just need to get that out of my system.
Yeah.
Hey everybody. We took a little break from the discussion because we either forgot to put the ad in or we just didn't want to break the conversation up and, you know, get away from whatever was going on to talk about L&L in the moment. So we're putting it in here. Today I'm talking about the zone control from L&L kilns. So what that means is most kilns have a single zone where you only have one thermocouple and that thermocouple is reading for the entire kiln. It's doing its best to fire consistently, but it may not fire the exact same temperature from top to bottom because it's only got one reading in that kiln with that one thermocouple. Most L&Ls are going to have multiple thermocouples depending on the amount of space you have in it. So for instance, I have an E23T and it has three thermocouples. So what I can expect is as the kiln is firing, it is going to adjust the temperature in those different zones based on where those thermocouples are, top, middle, bottom. And if it sees that a section is lagging behind, it's a little cooler, it needs to catch up, it's going to adjust on the fly. It's going to do that on its own, and it's going to produce more consistent results from top to bottom in that kiln because of those various thermocouples as well as the controller that's going to adjust on the fly. So that's the benefit of the zone control. I have another kiln. It's got a single thermocouple, and I've seen results where the top might be at cone 5 and the bottom might be at cone 6 and the middle might be at cone 6. You know, that thermocouple is going to be typically right in the middle. It is an equivalent size kiln to my bigger one. It's like a 7 cubic foot, and I think my bigger one is 7 or 10, something like that. And I'm going to see that there's a little bit of variability in that kiln that has a single thermocouple. So if you're interested and you're looking for another reason to buy an L&L kiln, zone control is one of those reasons that you can consider to get more consistent firings. And thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much, L&L. And if you'd like to find that and get yourself an L&L kiln or scout out what options they have available, you can see that all at hotkilns.com. Hotkilns.com. All right, let's get back to the discussion, and thanks so much.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's like if people ask me to do custom work, I can't do it.
What if it was a mug form that you already made, but they just wanted a certain quote on it?
I might be able to do that, but those are the ones that usually don't turn out. Like I rarely have a flop, but all these are the custom ones that flop.
Yeah, that's how it always is.
Is it also something that wouldn't sell if like you made it and the quote on it was so specific to that person, like it would?
It may or may not sell, but usually those are ones that you get something weird happens. Like I can't do custom work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it freaks me out.
I would imagine there's probably some. There's a lot less pressure when you can make what you make, and then whatever comes out is what you have for your update. Like, this is what I'm posting. It's not a pre-order. It's not a, here's everything I'm making. It's this series, and I'm going to have 30 pieces ready. Here you go.
No. Yeah, I need more variety, more spice in life. But yeah, but I can't, I could never do a pre-order. I would just want to curl up underneath my slab roller and go to sleep. I really couldn't. I couldn't. The stress of a pre-order would be too much.
I can see that with your work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you tend to make, when you're making them, are you batching the colors so that you do like two or three in similar colors, or are you just randomizing each one?
I'm sort of random, and that's one of the things Becca and I've been talking about, trying to figure out how I can make it a faster situation with my work. I just make stuff, and so I don't think about the colors ahead of time. I usually plan them out.
Whatever you're feeling.
As I go. Yeah.
Now, are you doing like, will you, because all of your mugs are the same size and they're all the same mm-hmm. size slab and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Do you make like 10 at a time, 15 at a time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, if make days, I'll make, you know, 10 at a time, put them in the damp box, you know, maybe even more, and then start doing the handles and the whole.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, getting the mug canvas is just step one of probably like six or something before.
Yeah, and I'll try to use like I'll try to say okay, I'll do six of the same stamp, my stamp pattern.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to do that more, and then the next six I'll do a different stamp pattern, and then but they all have to go in the same kiln because my kiln is pretty big, you know. Or,
mm-hmm.
I don't try to fill up the kiln because it's too big, but.
Do you have a preference of, I guess, first off, your color is from underglaze. Is that right?
No, I use Amoco satin matte glazes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they're completely mixable, which has been kind of cool. I really like them, and I'm trying to explain more about those, but they have like, what, maybe 12 colors? And I have probably 40 colors now.
Oh, so you can mix them like paint? Is what you mean by that? Paint.
Yeah.
Okay.
So whether you're mixing white with blue to make a lighter blue, or you're mixing like chartreuse and something else to make a different green, you know, it's really like mixing paint. It's very cool. It's
good. Have you always used those, or did you ever use like underglazes or anything like that? And just produce problems or...
Yeah, I was using stroke and coats before.
Okay.
But the stroke and coats aren't as stable, and they will run, and they'll move a little bit, and they'll mess up my design.
Okay.
Like, I have, like, definite black outlines, you know, that are indented into my pieces, and the stroke and coats will move into them.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that done with like a black wash or something at bisque or on or what?
No, at bisque I do a black underglaze wash, wipe on, wipe off, kind of wash with I use the Amoco Velvet, the jet black most mm-hmm. of the time.
Yeah.
I just got some Speedball, so I'm gonna try some of that because it's a little less expensive, but I don't know.
Speedball dries a lot faster.
Yeah.
But you can water it down quite a bit, probably.
But, yeah, you can water it down. But it's not... I've never found it to be matte.
Oh, is it more... So
it's shiny.
It's going to stick to the shelf if there's any on the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh?
I think so. But it could be my clay. Because
it probably will. You probably should put some aluminum hydrate if you're putting it directly on a shelf.
Yeah.
Because with the Amoco Velvet Jet Black, because I signed my name in underglaze, and it never sticks.
Yeah. I think if it was thin enough, it wouldn't stick. But
yeah.
Just a name. A name might not be enough to
worry about the job. But
it does leave a. A shadow on the kiln shelf. Yeah, but that's okay.
Yeah. Those are cool. Did you do those?
Yeah. Those were years ago. I did a lot of more sculptural pieces.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I see a plaque over there. Do you make plaques too, or something that hangs on the wall? Do you make some of those?
Let's see.
You know which one I've been like, I'm going to show you one that I really
over
like.
Your left shoulder, Jillian.
You might be a step stool.
No, it's this one.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
I love this one.
It's Michigan.
It's Michigan.
Never stop looking up, Michigan. If you seek a pleasant peninsula, look about you.
That's the Michigan's like our slogan. And never stop looking up, but it's up like UP.
The UP.
Oh, okay.
Peninsula.
Yeah.
And it's like shaped like Michigan.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I was selling those before, you know, when I was doing, I did some wholesale stuff a while back, and then I just decided it's.
What does the one over your shoulder that's above your work table say?
Oh, that's my, this is my business card. I actually did this for my business card. That's the front of my business card.
That's cool.
And so my cousin was visiting, and she goes, put that where you're doing your reels. So it's in your.
Oh, yeah.
Idea.
So it's in my, was in the background of my reels.
I like that.
So I have my little setup over here.
Has anybody ever asked you to make like house signs with house numbers on them or something like that?
I had a couple people. I've done a couple of those, but not. Yeah.
I feel like there's an artist that does a lot of tile work and painterly drawing illustrations, and she makes those. They look pretty cool.
Yeah. I've done a couple of things like that, but again, I'm not happy about doing custom work, so.
That's a one-off. Like, you can't just sell something that says 1, 2, 3, 4 on it, or, you know.
Yeah. And the last time I did a custom piece, I did, was thrown, but it was a utensil holder.
Mm-hmm.
I never have S-cracks. I never have problems. I made 4 freaking utensil holders for this, and to get the one that worked, finally.
I would have, after the second one, I would have been like, sorry, I'll give you this one that cracked for like
I literally hadn't had a S crack in 30 years. And
I'm surprised you didn't hand build it after you had some issues.
You know, I started hand building because I have it's sort of a neurological issue that makes me dizzy. So I couldn't look at the wheel for a long time.
Mm.
So I really have only been hand building for a few years. Only because I couldn't look at my wheel. Because imagine being dizzy and trying to look.
Yeah, you're like, I have to throw all of these forms. And then you're like, it's a stressful. Yeah.
So I stopped doing it a couple, just in the last like five, I've been only hand building for 5 years maybe.
Do you know what I'm going to start doing?
Yeah.
This is totally random. Okay. Not really. But can you imagine having a booth at a farmer's market with just numbers?
Yes.
For houses?
Yes. Because I've managed that pottery store up here. You know how many house numbers we sold?
So I'm sure so many.
Many.
If you had like 5 different typefaces and just did one through.
You could use that Califon wire, or whatever it's called, and like those are the hooks, and you could put holes on them and loop them on there.
Yeah.
They could pick their numbers and
different things you could do.
Yeah, and you just like had 5 different typefaces, and then all the numbers in white and in black. Wow.
Yeah.
Or colors, I guess, but still, like
you don't need to go too crazy.
You could make You could make a whole living just selling house numbers.
Oh, yeah. I know people that do.
I'm going to start making house numbers.
but you can't go too crazy, because if you get them too many choices and you run out of all the fours.
Is there a common number? Like, is there a bell curve of, like, numbers that's included in house numbers and, like.
I think there is. And I bet
zero is one of them.
Yeah, I can't remember because I was a buyer for this pottery studio like 100 different potters work, and we carried like 3 different house sets. And you were always running out of like no one has sevens. Seven was I always had a lot of sevens and nines available. Hmm. But one, like, you know, there are certain numbers that, you know.
Number three should come as no surprise for being the most popular new home door number.
Ah.
In numerology, one symbolizes one. Oh, well, that. No.
Those are address numbers, because you don't have any choice of your address number.
That was wrong.
Yeah. Because you know, like, Like mine is 6549.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's and then you have to do something with the space because mine's like 3 digits. I would suspect most are 4 digits. There's some that are 5 digits. So like if you had the little hooks and stuff, you'd probably have to have some little fun other tiles that could fill that other space.
Yeah. So
you have like a little leaf and then you have 138 or, yeah. You know.
Oh.
They were selling them in frames and then they would, would have a pattern, like a sailboat or a little, yeah.
I would just sell the numbers. They can put them up on their own houses.
Well, for sure. But the ones we were selling were frames that they fit into.
Oh, I see.
And then if it was a frame for 5, you could have a 3-digit and you could, like Ryan was saying, you have a leaf on one side and a sailboat or on the other side, whatever you wanted. But I like your idea of not having to have the design work. They could be just cool numbers.
Yeah, and then some of them can be tiles with numbers on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
not just like a cutout number 4, but actually like a 4 that's on the tile.
A 4 that's on a tile. Because yeah. Some people have squares that they need to, like, yeah. I have friends that their address is on tiles on their mailbox, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. That might
You do the numbers, Becca? Would you do a underglaze transfer? Would you do a decal? Would you stamp it?
I would do the easiest way possible. I don't know. I'd have to figure out what was the fastest.
But you know what? You're traveling around. You get only the Firefox, unless you find friends that you can fire. The
Firefox.
Firefox.
I'm going to start calling it
the Firefox.
The Firefox. That's trademarked. You can't use Firefox.
I'm just gonna start selling numbers, but they're not made out of clay. I'll just make fucking numbers. I'll figure it out.
It's gotta be unique enough that they're not, that it's better than just the basic ass numbers they can get from like whatever, you know,
or wherever.
It doesn't though. That's the thing. It doesn't have to be unique.
I mean, it depends on what you're paying, what they're spending for it. But
because if you are at a farmer's market and you see numbers, you're like, you know, our numbers are getting kind of old. We should replace these.
But then people get mad. They're like, they come back year after year.
Yeah.
They're like, where are the old numbers? They do. Oh my gosh. Especially if you're in a shop. It's one thing if, you know, you're your own person, but.
I have the ability to run away.
drive away.
I'm probably not going to be here again, so get it while you can.
My mom nicknamed Becca Turtle. She's like, Turtle. She carries her house on her back.
Her mom is so fucking cute. Like, okay, her parents are fucking adorable, first off. Julianne's mom and dad were like hardcore, like if van lifers, they were van lifers back in the day, but without a van. Well, no, they had a van.
No, they had a van. They had a van. In the 70s. My dad cut the top off of a van and added like a
big bathtub. He put a bathtub on the top, right? It was like upside down.
Basically, it was like he made a big dome top, and then we had like. Bunk beds up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. And they're telling me all these stories about how they like were going out to like all these parks and everywhere.
Oh, they had all their packs and hike around. And, oh yeah.
Yeah. Like today, Tom, her dad, was like, oh, well, you can get a shower at a state park for free. And I was like, not anymore, Tom. Not anymore.
Oh,
I don't know why I said that, but anyway, I just wanted to interject that.
Yes, the van people.
The van people.
They were definitely campers.
For sure.
Yeah.
They had like a VW bus?
No, it was a...
It was a Ford Ecolon. Okay. Eco van?
Eco...
It would have been early 70s, because I was born in 65, so it was probably
Econoline.
Like 72 or something. Yeah.
Econoline, yeah.
He traded in for a station wagon with the wooden paneling size.
Oh. Nice. Clark Griswold family truckster.
Yes.
It's been the most wonderful weekend of stories. Like, week of stories.
It's been funny stories.
Yeah, very funny stories, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whew.
But my dad was a wood shop and metal shop teacher, so I've always been doing stuff since I was a little kid. You know, there's always been, like, tools and things. So in the 70s, my parents wouldn't let me buy these wood clogs called candies that I really wanted. And I went into the wood shop and made myself a pair of clogs.
Those have to be the most uncomfortable shoe, like wooden shoes.
Yeah, but the ones I made were really uncomfortable because they were just like a flat slab of wood. I was like 12.
Oh, okay.
They weren't curved like the.
They weren't smooth and like form fitting and all that stuff.
I'm going to make myself a pair of clogs.
You sound like me when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to make myself a pair of clogs. I'll be cool.
The difference between, like, my childhood and your childhood, probably, other than the age difference, was that, like, I always, like, wanted to make stuff, but my dad didn't really have the tools to make it. So I would, like, rummage through all of his tools that weren't really tools and just make up my own tools. Uh-huh. And, like, your dad actually had tools.
Oh. My dad has every tool known to man.
Like, my dad's the kind of dad that puts a miter saw on top of a trash can because he's like, it's sturdy enough. And I'm like, Dad, it's not. It's not sturdy enough. You should find a table.
No.
Like,
yeah, no, we have every tool known to man in this house. There's no, although I was trying to find a freaking nail. Okay, the wood shop teacher who owns, like, so many screws. There's not one damn nail in this house. I was looking for a nail to hang up a picture.
Nails are inferior.
Apparently.
They are.
I just wanted a nail. I spent 3 hours looking for a goddamn nail in this house.
Yep.
Yeah, gotta have the nails for the hanging stuff.
Yeah.
Gotta have the nails.
Not really worth the screws. Yeah. There was one more question. That I feel like we've kind of touched on, but maybe would be good to clear up because Basking Turtle Designs had this question.
Oh.
All right. It reads, I'm wondering how you balance the need for new products versus having too many different things. I attend a local farmer's market monthly, so I try to have some staple items like mugs, spoon rests, gnomes, etc., while also having new things to draw people to my booth. To be honest, new items are for my creative and skill practice benefit, too. Just a late night throwing thought. Thanks for everything you guys produce and share with us. Prisha. Basking Turtle Designs.
Well, they were saying that their new items are for their creative and their own skill practice. And I think that's super important because I feel stuck making the same thing over and over and over. And yes, everyone wants the mugs and now the butter dishes, but I also think you shouldn't have so many different things in your booth that it's too chaotic looking, you know. But again, I don't do shows.
Yeah, so. But you have like stuff. You make stuff.
I make all kinds of stuff. But
like, you know, when you would sell at a workshop or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
And I try to bring a few new things, like I was making vases recently. So, and I've never made vases. So, like, this is a new vase. See the new vase? It's a new vase. It is a rocking vase. That's but I made one. And it was just kind of a fun.
And it says, I can buy myself flowers.
Yes.
That's the quote from the song, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Miley Cyrus.
Yeah. So, you know, I think you have to play and make a new thing every once in a while.
Yeah.
You have to. Because.
I think it's important to, like, make. What I do is I make one thing and I'll make, like, I'll make, like, 20 of them. Mm-hmm. If it's, like, earrings or whatever, like, small stuff. Or even just one pair or two pairs. Like, I'm making rings now. I'm going to try and make rings.
Ooh, I want to see those.
And made, I forgot to glaze them, but I threw one of them in the glaze frame, and we'll see how it turns out. But yeah, like, I'm going to wear it for a week or two and make sure that it's up to snuff, you know? But I'm not going to I'm going to tell people about it, but I'm not necessarily going to, like, mass produce it.
No, say, this is a new thing I'm thinking about making.
Yeah.
What do you think? You got it on your hand. And,
right.
And people are like, ooh. But then you realize, you know, it's not very strong or something later.
Right.
You know?
Like, yeah. Yeah. And I'll if they're strong, I'll sell them for more. But if they're cheap, I'll just sell them for $10, you know? And it's like.
Well, if it breaks, it breaks. Whatever.
Breaks, it breaks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, I think that, I don't know what we're really talking about.
But just about, you know, how many, you know, to balance the products. And how many different things.
I think that playing, like having those play days is really important to balance those products because I don't think, I mean, like I try to make like one new shape a year. For me, I think it's important to every year introduce something new.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily for me, but just so that people can have some variety. You know, but then like, I'm not going to introduce like 12 new things every time, but that doesn't mean that I'm not making something new almost every single time I'm making things.
Because like this vase might be a flop.
Right. So like I'm making like when I do earrings, like I'm making like 5 different weird pairs of earrings and coming up with new ideas. And I'll put them out in my, like, in my booth and see if people like them. And if they don't, then I'm like, meh, that was fun.
It was a test.
Yeah, that was fun while it lasted. And if they do, then I'm like, oh.
Does that affect whether you keep doing them if people aren't reacting to them?
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Okay.
Like, if no one looked at this oh, look at your kitty. Oh, there's Rachel. No, it's not Rachel. I just saw that fabric.
Flowery.
Yeah.
No, that's autumn.
Fabric. I thought it was maybe Rachel standing back there. But I think it's good to play with new things, but maybe not have so much in your booth that's...
I mean, she says new products versus having too many different things. Just because you are making new things doesn't mean you have to show or sell new things.
Yeah.
It could just stay in the studio until you're... Because for me, like, I... Maybe it's a drawback, but when I make something new, I have to put myself in the mindset of how would I feel if I had to scale this? If I had to make this in the inventory that I already make and add this in, is it something I'm comfortable making? Is it something that is reliable that's not going to have a bunch of breakage? Is it something that I feel good about marketing and talking to customers about and taking to shows, and do I have space? Like, that's the way my brain goes, and that's probably the business side of it. And scalability versus, first off, do I enjoy the form? Am I liking it? Or am I just doing it because some other people asked about it and I feel like I can make it and it's feasible to make? So, like, why not, you know? So, like, that's where my brain goes when I'm thinking about, like, new things and experimenting.
When I like started selling things, I remember I like made a bunch of different items and I was like, this is my line.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a line of items.
Yeah.
And that really kept me like focused on those things.
Yeah. You know, like 10 pieces or whatever.
Like at a small cup, a small mug, a large mug, a cup, a butterbell, which I regret, and a like spoon rest. And 2 sizes of bowls. And that's, like, all I sold. And then I, like, slowly picked up on who was buying what, who wasn't buying what, and then, like, adding and subtracting, mm-hmm. you know, when I saw fit. And I think that, and like, I made a whole set of those things before I even started making them and, like, had them on, like, the windowsill. So I saw what they looked like. Mm-hmm. So I was, like, reminded of what, you know, what I was making.
Yeah. Yeah, I think also I'm trying to think if I'm more likely to keep doing it because people are buying it. I definitely think I am. Like, I don't want to take stuff to and from shows a ton and then be like, I don't like want to keep taking these if they're not going to get sold or if they're just not something that people are reacting to and taking up space on the table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like if it's, you know, if I make like those, well, we'll see about the mixing bowls. I haven't sold any mixing bowls yet, but like, you know, how many times do I have to take them out and have them at shows and see if people are reacting to them? Are they at the right shows or do I like want to go a different route with them? You know, there's a wholesaler that's interested. Like, do I go the wholesale route because I know they're interested in them? Am I willing to part with them for less money, but I don't have to worry about marketing and selling them and lugging them to and from shows because a wholesaler can take care of that stuff. Like, true. I don't know. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways you can play around with it. And, yeah, like you were saying, Julianne, just make stuff for fun.
If you're, occasionally, when I need to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm much more likely to spend time, like, if I'm not sure what I want to be doing, like, I'm more likely to spend time on something that's pretty mindless, like, do the thing that you know is going to sell, because it's not wasted time. Like, you know, yeah. What's the risk there? But that can only sustain you for so long if you're just doing, like, robotic, going through the motions of making the same things that always sell, and you're not really feeling it or feeling attached to it or, like, passionate about the thing and like excited when it comes out of the kiln or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But
and I, of course, I don't make as many pieces as you do either. So just yeah. Because of the quality, but just the time consumption of each piece from my yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's some pieces like the pasta bowls I've like shifted a little bit. Like I wanted to get more like Becca's shape of pasta bowl, or we tried some other pasta bowls of people's, and I'm like, you know, the narrower fits a little nicer, but I got to figure out like how to throw it that way, because the way I did it before was wider and shallower and like kind of like frumpy and like felt heavy, and I didn't really like it. So I'm like, okay, like I don't feel as good about putting these out at shows because I'm not as proud of them. So like I need to shift them a little bit. They're going to get a little bit better, and then I'll feel better about putting them out, you know?
Yeah.
So
that sounds good. A little more height.
Yeah.
A little more height and like, I don't know. It just seems like it like fits in your hand better.
A little bit more air underneath. Just enough. Just enough for lift. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of. It's like floating a little bit, sort of.
Oh my God. Is that Marv's?
It's Autumn.
It's Autumn.
She's very mouthy. All right, Becca, what other questions or topics do you think before we wrap up here?
Oh my gosh, I'm still completely consumed in house numbers. I'm not going to lie.
do you ever feel like making something new is like, I don't know, I feel like you can get in deep on something and then you're like, I'm never going to make this ever again.
Oh, 100%. I am.
I'm never like that. I'm like, I got to be consistent. Disciplined, got to do this because somebody's going to come back and they're going to want something similar to match. And
you like, bet your fucking ass I'm going to like get house numbers all done. I'm going to go back to Indy. I'm going to have my slab roller. I'm going to make like 20 of each house number, and then I'm going to bisque them, and then I'm going to paint them on the road and sell them at my shows.
I feel like your game, so that we're planning though. Your game.
Oh, yeah. Is it okay? Here's a question.
Okay.
And we kind of like talked about this, so I want to make this game, and it's a game that already exists. Like this guy came up with it, and like,
but it's like made out of like cardboard, like this.
Yeah, you know, it's made out of like regular game piece games, you know, and the actual game's called Sagami.
How do you spell that?
Sagami, I think.
Sagami.
And it's pretty complex, and I want to make it out of clay. And, no, Sagani.
Sagani.
Yeah, Yeah, with an N. S-A-G-A-N-I.
Game.
And it's like $30, but I don't want to pay for that. But I also just want to make it. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, like, you know, is that, like, is it, like, illegal to sell, like, my own version of this game?
Oh.
You know, to like, is it, I think.
Well, maybe you call it something else.
Well, yeah, but it's still the same, has the same fucking rules, you know?
It looks like there's a board and everything with it, too.
Yeah, there's a board.
Oh.
But I don't think you need that board, honestly. Oh, I don't know. It's just a numbers situation. It's just a points game.
Huh.
And so I'm just, you know, I don't know. I'm like really intrigued by games right now for some reason. Like I really want to get into making dominoes.
I was going to say, have you ever made dominoes?
I legitimately have the, fucking resin. The silicone molds.
Molds for them.
And I've done 2 test dies with slip, and they worked out okay. Not the best, but they worked out okay.
We should have been playing dominoes the last couple nights.
I know. Tom, we play tomorrow.
Tom and Kathleen? Yeah, when I get home from work.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of like, that's kind of where I'm at. And I don't know. I'm like, if I do something like this game, you know, it's obviously not going to be as complex, but it'll be its own thing. So, like, can I sell that? You know, obviously not saying that it's the same name or...
I feel like that's so niche, though. Like, you'd have to explain, what is this for?
Right.
Like, you'd have to have a rule set and everything.
Like, for reals, I just want to make the game so I can play the game because you can play a one person version of it. Like, I just want it so that I can play it.
Maybe make one and see whether you really want it. Because yeah. I see all these little colored, like,
yeah,
little dots you got to use. And it's pretty complex looking.
It's pretty complex. It's not like, yeah, it's definitely, it definitely has a lot of parts to it. But dominoes, I know that my parents won't be listening to this, so if anybody is listening to this that knows my parents, don't tell them, which is highly unlikely. But I'm going to make them a set of dominoes for Christmas this year, and I told her that I might send them a set, too, if I can make 2 sets. But, yeah, so I'm going to make them a set of dominoes. I just have to – I'm committing to it is the hardest part because it's a little bit –
It's a lot.
It's a lot, and it's, like, just a different territory that I'm not, like, totally used to, you know?
Yeah.
But I have the whole, like, all the molds.
There's a student when I was in high school, and his, like, project he did, he made a chess set. He did them all wheel thrown. And it was, like, his own interpretation on the chess pieces, so it's, like, yeah. You know. But...
When I was 8, I made a whole chess set, too, in wood.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
I did about that.
And everything?
I'm sorry?
On a lathe and everything?
No, I cut them out on a jigsaw.
Wow.
Yeah, I have it still.
Were they like the wooden clogs, or were they just squares of
wood? I mean, I was 8 years old or 9 years old when I made it, so it's you know, it's not it's in a 9-year-old work, but they...
Yeah.
They weren't as uncomfortable as the clogs. You could play with them still.
Okay.
I couldn't walk in those clogs, but I made them, damn it.
I mean, Becca, for, like, games, you could easily make little checker pieces out of your fidget stones.
That's true.
You sure could. Or tic-tac-toe pieces.
Yeah, I mean, you could use different colors of clay for the piece. You wouldn't even need anything fancy. You don't even need the dots on it. You just need colored things, you know?
Yeah. You can make the whole board, too, but that's... I think that if I made, like, a clay board, it'd probably mount it on wood or something like that, you know?
Chinese checkers? You could probably do little clay balls in a little... I don't know.
Oh, yeah!
What's that other game, too?
That's such a great idea!
What's that other game that it has... You move the marbles... Oh, what's it called? They have little divots.
Right, it's
like... Mancala.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, Mancala. Andrew Linderman has a Mancala board that's made of clay, and it is it's a sculpture. It's a fucking sculpture.
That is cool. It's I would love to do that. I want to see Andrew.
Okay. See, I'm just gonna have to start making games. That's
if you could, like these little fidget stones, those would be your Mancala your little chip things.
Mancala chips.
No, I'd make smaller ones. You have to make tiny ones.
But
yeah, not this big, but you know what I mean. Like they'd be tumbled and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm just gonna have to start making
games. Mancala would be a good, relatively easy game to make.
Mancala would be really easy. Chinese checkers would be easy. Dominoes would be not easy but fun, and
checkers, regular checkers.
The dominoes I really want to do with the slip, and I'm just.
I mean, I can see like you just have a little mesh bag with the little fidget stones. Here's your checkers.
Yeah.
You got a checkerboard. Here's your checkers. Just grab the bag.
Yeah.
I like the idea also of making the board and making it really like design, idealized design. Mm. And
you could almost mosaic it on wood.
Yeah, and like putting it in like actually.
What if you painted it?
What?
What if you just painted it? You like painting.
Yeah, exactly. Like painted it and then but then secured it onto wood so it wouldn't break.
Or just have the board be painted wood and then the pieces being clay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I feel like you could get kind of designy with that.
Painting it would be fun.
It would be fun.
Yeah, like put actual paint down for the grid and do your background and do whatever design you want on it.
It'd be fun, and then have all the little pieces in clay.
Dude, I don't need paint in my van too.
Maybe limit yourself to like 5 colors or something.
Yeah.
And then you got to get creative with mixing them and all that.
And then she's got to have pieces of wood.
You got to sell them quick enough to where you don't have them that long.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily, it's probably just slabs of wood. I mean, you could probably do it on what if you did it on canvas? What if you just rolled it up? You can paint canvas.
Picture like a, like, what are they called? When it was canvas rugs, those painted canvas rugs like that, where you put gesso and yeah. And so
what if I did it on a slab mat? That'd be fucking hilarious.
You could collaborate with a slab mat company or whatever. Be like, send me some of these little 9x9 squares.
Yeah, that you're going to make into checkerboard.
That'd be hilarious.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Oh,
well, they were giving those samples away at
they were.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
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 Yep.
That's in Colorado, I think. Stone Leaf Pottery, I think, is where they...
Oh, that's Stone Leaf?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is Colorado.
That's a good idea. They're hard. They're not rollable, though.
I feel like canvas or something like that that's rollable would take up less space, and you don't have to worry about the wood situation.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how creative you can get with paint on canvas versus wood. I feel like you kind of like the crispness of... on wood, but I mean
you could do chess pieces too. I mean, there could be like a really geometric version of chess too. That would be really cool.
Totally.
God fucking damn it, you guys suck.
Is there ceramic game makers out there? Like, there probably are crafty.
So there's apparently this guy that Andrew Linderman was telling me about. He was at this I gotta find him so that people can look him up. But he was at a show, and he had these laser cut puzzles.
Oh
yeah, I've seen some different people like that.
Mm-hmm. And it's this mouse, it's this cheese pieces and mouse, and you have to get the mouse.
Oh, how cute!
It's from, it's not JL Puzzles. It's PuzzleMist.com. So PuzzleMist.com, and he makes a bunch of them. And I'm not shitting you. I stayed at Andrew's table and tried to work on this puzzle for, like, it felt like 2 hours, but it was probably only 45 minutes. And it felt impossible. We eventually had to kind of look up a clue. And, but yeah, he just makes these laser cut puzzles, and I don't know if he comes up with them or not, but he has all different ones, and apparently he fucking kills it at shows.
Really?
Yeah, he's probably got something to grab the kids in. They could play with something, try it out.
Like $23. It's one of those, and they're like fucking intricate. Like this one has interlocking like lace, like diamond here.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah, and like, and he always has them in the puzzle a different way than you need to solve the puzzle.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's wild. And I was like, it'd be so much fun to do something like that. That's super unique, and just like nobody has it. Like people have mugs, people have cups.
I think it's a cool way to introduce kids and young folks to ceramics and pieces that are like, hey, these are meant to be played with and tactile, and don't be nervous, you know.
Yeah, the tactile thing is great.
Oh! I think I have a question that we can end on. That's from Aletha.
Okay.
And that she just texted me.
Oh, really?
Well, she texted it to me at 9:30, but after we started. Okay, she says, podcast question. If you could be a wedding cake, what kind would you be? Examples. 5-tier cake with frilly buttercream and classic bride and groom topper, or some sort of sculpture fondant theme, sheet cake with your faces on it, Duncan Hines cupcakes, that's her. Okay, if you could be a wedding cake, what would you be? We need flavors also.
Who wants to go first?
I think you know. So.
Oh, I'd totally be fondant.
You'd be fondant?
Totally fondant because
how many tiers?
Three, because I don't want a giant wedding.
Okay.
So 3 tiers, fondant, sculptured, you know, like, to look kind of like my work in a way.
Oh, yeah. You want your cups in a cake.
Yes, my work in a cake.
Okay.
Although I hate the taste of fondant. It's disgusting. So you have to have really good frosting underneath it. Yeah. So,
I love the taste of
fondant. Have you ever had anybody, like, ask you to do your design on, like, a cake or fondant?
No, but I would love to now that I'm thinking about it. Wouldn't that be fun?
I mean, a lot of the tools with, like, the quilting and stuff, like, I've seen people use those tools for fondant, right? A lot of those plastic rolling tools are for fondant, right?
Yeah, and, you know, most of my tools are wire stamps that I've made. So, totally, that would work really easy in fondant.
Yeah.
That would be... Yeah, so totally fondant, 3 tiers to look like my work. I like it has a really good buttercream frosting.
Ugh, yes.
Buttercream.
Because I don't like I want to peel the fondant off, even though it's pretty. I don't want to eat it.
I like fondant.
Well, I can eat a little bite, just a little nibble, but I don't want to eat the whole cake worth of it.
Gosh, cake
flavor?
Yeah, you don't have to pick 3 flavors, just one.
One. Something with lemon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this me picking a cake for me to eat or for other people?
For you.
Well, it's technically wedding. If you could be a wedding cake.
Wedding cake. Yeah.
But it really, I think it's like, what would you want to eat, essentially?
Oh, okay. I mean, mine would probably just be carrot cake with buttercream icing.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I made
three-tier carrot cake. I mean, that's a lot of carrot cake. That doesn't appeal to everybody, but, I mean, maybe you have a layer of basic, like, marbled cake in there, maybe? No. So it's like, or white cake. I don't know.
I made the best goddamn carrot cake of my life for my dad's birthday last month. Oh, and it's already been requested for me to make it again.
Okay. Love a good carrot cake.
Yeah.
I have my answer.
All right.
I'm ready. Rainbow chip box cake.
Funfetti.
But not funfetti, rainbow chip. Rainbow very chip. Specifically different.
Oh, I don't know this cake.
Rainbow chip, different. Betty Crocker, funfetti is Pillsbury. Rainbow chip, Betty Crocker with the rainbow chip icing.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Okay, this is what I'm thinking.
I am so unfamiliar with this. I have no idea.
Well, if I can find it at the store tomorrow, then I'll make some. Okay, this is what I'll walk over to Ken's. This is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking just like one layer of cake. Not layer, but like one cylindrical of cake.
Yeah.
And the interior is the rainbow chip frosting, which has the chips, which is the same as the Dunkaroo frosting. Uh-huh. And it's so good. And so that has the layers, but it's fun. It's rainbow chip all the way through, which is quote unquote funfetti. And then on the outside, it's got to be like the best goddamn buttercream fucking frosting on the planet. And a lot of it, like a lot. Like, I want it half frosting.
What?
And I want it cold, because cold buttercream frosting is, that's where it's fucking at.
You know, I imagine her cake, when you cut it, like, nerds come out of the center.
Oh, yes!
Nerd inside. Nerd clusters. Yeah, you don't want to accidentally bite into that.
They spill out of the center.
Oh, and in the rainbow, like, in the rainbow chip, somebody's put, like, a rainbow, like, food coloring, so it looks like a rainbow, and it has the chips.
Yes.
Yeah. And the frosting has to be rainbow, obviously.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
As obnoxious as possible.
As obnoxious as possible.
Yeah.
I want to make my cake now. My fondant cake. I really want to.
You should.
Absolutely. My birthday's in December. Maybe I'll make my own damn cake.
Yeah. I'll have my cake and eat it too.
No one's around on my birthday, so it's by myself.
There you go.
Would you go through all that fondant trouble if you're going to end up peeling, I guess, for a photo?
Yeah, I would, because it would look like, you know, fondant could look like the, you know, I use that satin matte glaze, so it would have that.
I have an idea. Look. I have an idea. What if you used buttercream frosting that was black to coat the entire cake, and then instead of pushing in the indents, you did, you cut out.
Oh, pieces.
Pieces of fondant and put them on the cake.
So it looked more mosaic-y looking.
Well, no, okay. Maybe that doesn't work.
It'd be cool either way, but I think the other way would look more like my pottery.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's 11:25. We've got to go cover up a kiln, and... Yeah,
it was wonderful. I've been great. So nice to catch up with you. Brian. Yeah.
Yeah. Let everybody know where they can find you on the web.
The web. So, Facebook. I'm under Julianne Rausch Pottery.
How do you spell Rausch? How do you spell all of it? Because
my name is Julianne. That's all one word, no E. So it's Juliann, and the last name is Rausch. Rausch. So if you just Google Julianne Rausch, that's usually on Instagram. It's Julianne Rausch. Facebook, Julianne Rausch Pottery. My website is Julianne Rausch Pottery. It's pretty.
And what do you present? You say you're going to be at ClayCon West. What are you presenting at ClayCon West?
I'm presenting Finding Your Own Voice. And I'm going to be, one of my things that I do that's a little specific towards my pottery, I make wire stamps that make it very, you know, not completely different, because obviously it's not that, you know, there's probably been other people who have done that, but so I'm going to do talking about finding your own voice and making wire stamps.
Get it.
Yeah.
All right. Looking forward to it. We'll see you there. Becca's I'll see you there.
Yeah.
It won't be too long. I'm sure it'll sneak up on us really quick. So,
really quick.
Yeah. I'll have numbers by then.
You're going to be selling house. You're going to be going around the country selling house numbers.
What better way?
Just take your van and be like, I'm coming your way with some house numbers. Like.
And game pieces.
Yep. House numbers and game pieces. All right. Anyway.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of Wheel Talk. This podcast is made possible through the contributions of all of our listeners who always ask us great questions, leave us reviews, and contact with us through social media. Thanks to all the fellow makers as well who take time to be interviewed and share about their lives and businesses.
And thank you to Ashley from Boldover Ceramics and Lindy from Lindy Garner Ceramics for their assistance on the Wheel Talk podcast Instagram. You are invaluable. Thank you to everybody.